translation. You have personally seen how the king of Chedi, Shishupal, achieved success in yoga practice, although he hated Lord Krishna. Even the actual yogi aspire after such success with great interest by performance of their various practices. Who can tolerate separation from him? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Krishna's causeless mercy was exhibited in the great assembly of Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was merciful even to his enemy, the king of Chedi, who always tried to be an envious rival of the Lord. Because it is not possible to be a bona fide rival of the Lord, the king of Chedi was extremely malicious toward Lord Krishna. In this, he was like many other asuras, such as Kamsa and Jarasandha. In the open assembly of the Rajasuya sacrifice performed by Maharaj Yudhisthira, Shishupal insulted Lord Krishna, and he was finally killed by the Lord. But it was seen by everyone in the assembly that a light flashed out of the body of the king of Chedi and merged into the body of Lord Krishna. This means that Chedi Raj achieved the salvation of attaining oneness with the Supreme, which is a perfection most desired by the jnanis and yogis, and for which they execute their different types of transcendental activities. It is a fact that persons who are trying to understand the Supreme Truth by their personal endeavors of mental speculation or mystic powers of yoga achieve the same goal as others who are personally killed by the Lord. Both achieve the salvation of merging in the Brahmajyoti rays of the transcendental body of the Lord. The Lord was merciful even to his enemy, and the success of the king of Chedi was observed by everyone who was present in the assembly. Vidura was also present there, and therefore Uddhava referred the incident to his memory. Om Jnana Timanandasya Janan Jana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So this is another one of the verses spoken in ecstasy by Uddhava, who's remembering Krishna, and this chapter is called Remembrance of Lord Krishna. And he's deliberating, he's meditating, he's recalling in great love of Krishna, all these extraordinary actions of Krishna, how he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but at the same time he's performing like an ordinary human being, and he's expressing how extraordinary those things are. And in this particular verse, he's taking us to this sacrifice of King Yudhisthira. King Yudhisthira had this desire to glorify Krishna, so he arranged this Rajasuya sacrifice. And he's so important in the universe that all the great people of spiritual criteria were attending there. And quite an extensive list was given. Everyone, more or less everyone who's anyone spiritually was there. We could say in our recent history in England, we had something similar, the king's coronation, and anyone who was anyone was on the invitee list. So here, particularly in this list of great people, they're all spiritual people were named, there was no kind of, they didn't list a whole bunch of kings, he just listed all the people of holy credentials. Lord Brahma was there, Lord Shiva was there, Vyasadeva was there, Vasishtha was there, to name but a few. Anyone who's anyone of spiritual authority was at this Rajasuya. This is why it's mentioned here, that it was an open assembly. So what Shishupal did was actually quite unforgivable. We can imagine suddenly the king's coronation, someone stands up and starts, hang on a minute, I don't like how this is going, let me say what I think shouldn't be going on here. So this is the setting. So Shishupal, he could not restrain himself. And a number of things you can look at Shishupal is that he's playing this role as a demon, and he's doing it really, really well. He's kind of, you know, born with this enmity for Lord Krishna. And something really got him soaked up. Go back a bit. So there's this beautiful, beautiful, exquisitely beautiful Rukmini. And everyone thought, she's so perfect, she should marry Krishna. And her father wanted her to marry Krishna, and all the other people around her thought that she should marry Krishna. But her elder brother, Rukmi, he thought, no, Shishupal is my friend, I want her to marry Shishupal. So the marriage is arranged. It's all arranged. And Rukmini's thinking, oh no. She's heard about Krishna. She hasn't seen Krishna. She has heard about him. And she's given her heart to Krishna. She wants to marry Krishna. And it's described there that in her moroseness, she didn't just stay morose. She did something practical about it. She sent a message to Krishna to let him know that her intention, her hope was that actually somehow or other, she wouldn't marry Shishupal, but she would marry Krishna. She told him, I want to go away. I want to be with you, Krishna. So Krishna also heard about Rukmini. She had intelligence. She was liberal-mindedness. She had exquisite beauty. And she had righteous behavior. She was extraordinary characteristics. So Krishna was always thinking of her. She was always thinking of Krishna. Now, of course, she didn't know that Krishna was always thinking about her. Anyway, so in her moroseness that she did not want to marry Shishupal, she arranged that a brahmana would take a message to Krishna to let Krishna know that, help me out here. I don't want to go around this particular marriage. I want to marry you. So on the other side, here's Shishupal. He is about to get married to Rukmini. He's there. This kind of messaging was happening almost like just before. So he's building up this, you can imagine, he's going to marry this, like you could say, the most beautiful woman on the planet. He's about to marry her. He's feeling excited, apprehensive, eagerness, passion. Everything is there building up in his mind. And so that, you know, a day's approaching. On the other side, Rukmini's there. She sent his messenger. They sent this brahmana to Krishna to give him her story that she wants him to save her from this marriage, and she wants to marry Krishna. So she sends the brahmana, and she doesn't know. The brahmana went there. He sent the message to Krishna. Krishna got the message. She didn't know. She hadn't heard what the reply was. The next day, the marriage is there, and she's in an anxiety. Is Krishna going to save me? Has he heard my message? And she's sobbing. She's crying. She thinks, oh no, my worst fears are going to be fulfilled. She's sobbing. And then suddenly she sees the brahmana. She gets, actually what happened is her left arm starts twitching. And that's auspicious. If your left side starts twitching for a woman, that's auspicious. If it's your right arm for a man, it's auspicious. Opposite. So she starts feeling this kind of tingling in her left side, and she realized there's some auspicious sign here. Then she sees the brahmana. So she feels something good's going to happen. So she goes to the temple of Durga, and she's going there, and she's still not seeing Krishna. She's obviously, what's going to happen? Is he really going to come? And then she does go to the temple of Durga. She has a ceremony. And as she comes out, she sees Krishna. She's never seen Krishna before, but she sees him. And then she knows that's Krishna. And he grabs her. He puts her on the chariot. Off he goes. So on the other side, here's Shishupal. He's seeing things from the other side. He's about to marry her. She comes out to this demigoddess. It's only a few minutes away or a very short period of time before he's handed her in marriage. And they're going to be speeding off into the sunsets together. So suddenly Krishna comes and swipes her from right under his vision. So that makes him a bit angry towards Krishna. Anyway, Balaram was aware of all this, so he took an army there, and they thwarted the resistance that Krishna. So what? Imagine your wedding day, and somebody just steals your bride and goes out the door. You'd be angry. So Shishupal is livid, and therefore he had this animosity towards Krishna. So somehow that he wasn't able to do anything about it. Krishna was successful. He stole Rukmini. But that, you can imagine, that anger was there. So this is why he has this anger. Now, okay, that's kind of, you could say, the setting of what's happening now. But Shishupal came into this world with this hatred towards Krishna. Actually, we understand that Krishna loves Shishupal. Shishupal is one of his residents in Vaikuntha. And then we hear this whole pastime, how Krishna wanted to have this sporting, you know, he wanted to have some enemies. So these gatekeepers, Jai and Vijay, there's a whole pastime there. They were cursed by the Kumaras to play a role. So they agreed, okay, we'll become your enemies for three lifetimes. So they appeared as Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, as Ravana and Kumbhakarna, and now as Shishupal and Dantavakra. So Shishupal was born with this anger towards Krishna. Shishupal also had, when he was born, he was a bit of a, he was had defects. He was born with four arms and three eyes. Now, it wasn't four arms, we might see like Lord Vishnu. Somehow it was clearly a physical defect. And it was foretold that the person who took away these defects would be the person who killed him. So at one part he was sat on the lap of Krishna. Krishna and Shishupal were relatives. Krishna's father, Vasudeva, sister is Shishupal's mother. So they were cousins. So there's a kind of family relationship between them. So at some point in the relationship, Shishupal was sat on the lap of Krishna when he had these defects, and those defects were removed. Therefore, it was understood that Krishna would be the killer of Shishupal. Samarali's mother, Shishupal's mother, got Krishna to promise that, okay, I won't kill him, but I'll tolerate 100 insults. I'll tolerate 100 insults. So that was kind of the setting. So here what Uddhava is talking to Vidura, because Vidura was there. He was one of these distinguished guests who were physically present at the Rajasuya ceremony. And therefore he witnessed what went on. So what had happened was, as part of the ceremony, they have to select somebody to be the first person to receive worship after the ceremony was conducted. And there was various discussions going on, and they didn't come to any conclusion. Now, the reason why they couldn't conclude things is because not everybody there was a pure devotee. Not everybody there was fully self-realized. This is how it's been described in the verses. And Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are there, and they thought, well, no one's asking us what our opinion is, so they didn't say anything. They thought, let's see what Sahadev says. And sure enough, Sahadev, one of the Pandavas, he had this qualification that he had the ability to analyze things very clearly. So he said, actually, we should offer the first worship to Achyuta. We should offer the first worship to Achyuta. And that got Shishupal pretty upset. You can imagine, we in our own lives, sometimes there are people who rub us up the wrong way. Some or other, we can't help it. Whenever they speak, we think, oh my God, that person's about to speak. And we might not put ourselves in a situation to hear them. We often choose whose class we go to, for example. Somebody's like that. So sometimes this is a kind of natural thing. For example, I hate ladies' fingers. Slimy vegetable. I hate it. So I don't know why, I just don't like slimy vegetables. So sometimes there are people in our lives, we just don't like them. So somewhere or other, Shijaba was like that. He just didn't like Krishna. So suddenly, here this wonderful performance. It's like a really the king's coronation. Really, it's like a coronation for Yudhishthira. And what are they going to do? They want Krishna to be the person to worship. So Shishupa could not hold back. And the first thing he said is that he's just a gopa. He's just a cowman. It's funny, when I first started looking at this verse, I thought, my God, there's nothing here about cows. I thought one of my kind of things, I wanted to try and find something about cows in each verse because we don't hear about it so much. And I thought, there's nothing here about cows. But actually, there's a lot about cows. And the first thing is, the first insult that Shishupal said to Krishna is that you're not qualified because you're just a gopaya. You're just a gopala, a person who looks after cows. Shishupal's name means, Shishu means children, pal means to protect. His name means protect children. I don't know why, what children would be protected, but that's his name. And Krishna's gopal, one who protects cows. Now, we think that's wonderful that Krishna protects cows, but in that setting, in the setting of kings, it was a word of insult. He just looks after cows. Now, interesting enough, it seems to me that in our society today, in our ISKCON society, we still suffer from a bit of you're just a gopal, because we don't glorify it very much. We don't find many people saying, you've got to become a cow protector. Of course, this month. This is a very important month. We're book distributors. This is the book distribution month, and we have a whole month dedicated to book distributors. But we don't often hear of the importance of cow protectors. Now, years and years ago in our movement, if you were on the farm, you definitely would have felt that you were the dregs of the ISKCON society. You couldn't do anything else, therefore you were sent to the farm. So it wasn't very flattering to be on the farm. No, it's not the same today, but it's not as so prestigious. So in this realm of kings and great holy people, he thought that, no, Krishna shouldn't be worshipped. He's just a gopala. Interesting enough, Sahadev, he was an expert cow protector. We know this from when the Pandavas were in exile, and there was one year where they had to be incognito. So when he went to Virat, he said, I was the person looking after the cows of the Pandavas, and I'm an expert cow protector. So in this pastime, there's two very important references to cow protection. Interesting enough, in this chapter of the Bhagavatam, there are six references to cow protection. In the third chapter, third canto, there's about 30 references are related to cow protection. And in this chapter, there's six. So if you look for them, you can find them. I'm doing a research right now. I'm selecting all the verses that have something to do with cow protection, and so far there's going to be about 400 in the Bhagavatam, and there's about 30 in this third canto. So here's the setting that is going on, and so Shishupal, he couldn't hold back. He just says all the nasty things. Have you ever done that sometimes? You're in a particular situation, you don't like someone, you feel your heart burning. You know you shouldn't say something, but you say it anyway. You don't feel good about saying it. You force it, kind of urge to say something. You say something, and you feel bad. Anyway, Shishupal may not have felt bad, but he just he just could not tolerate the fact that Krishna has been worshipped. And he said all these insulting things, and he says like 100 things. The Bhagavatam doesn't go into the 100 things, but I think the Mahabharat may go into all those things. Interesting enough, I think it's Sridhar Swami and other acharyas, they point out that everything he said, although it was nasty, it could be twisted by just changing how you look at the Sanskrit words into something praiseworthy. So Shishupal says all these things, and eventually he was killed. What was happening, he was saying all these things, and you can imagine someone comes in here and starts insulting one of our devotees and saying all nasty things about them, you'd all feel like you want to go there and grab this person and throw him out of the temple. So this is what was happening. Shishupal was just insulting left, right, and center, and all these are kings, these are warriors, these are fighters. They started pulling out, getting ready to get their swords out. And Krishna thought, no, I can't have all this bloodbath in this holy place. So he said, don't worry. He pacified them all. And then he invoked his Sudarshan chakra and whoosh, doom, took the head off. Just right there, whoosh, head came right off in that ceremony. And what was extraordinary was that a light emanated from Shishupal's body, and everyone saw it like a meteor going straight into Lord Krishna, into his body. So everybody there saw that, which is extraordinary because we hear that you can't see the soul. We don't see such a light from one body to another. So in one sense, it was Krishna's causeless mercy. He was showing everybody there something really, really extraordinary. So people saw this light going into the body of Krishna. They saw Shishupal, that. So Uddhava is saying, you saw this. You were there. You witnessed this extraordinary thing that happened. That Shishupal, who has dvesha, raga dvesha, we hear this, attachment and hatred. His characteristic was he had a hatred for Krishna. But somehow that hatred for Krishna took him to an amazing place. So here this verse is talking about that the yogis, they're aspiring for that. Some of them want to merge into the body of Krishna. Now it's interesting that whenever we read any section, I mean there was a previous section, I think in the second canto, that talks about the devotees meditating on the form of the Lord, like performing like a yogi. It's always devotional service. They're thinking about Krishna as a person, Lord Vishnu as a person, describe what he looks like, his beautiful smiling face. He's leaning into the devotees, he's smiling at them. And all the people around Krishna or Vishnu are beautiful, and they're also extraordinary people. So when we read yoga from the Bhagavad Gita, from the Srimad Bhagavatam, we don't get an impersonal direction. We get very clearly the idea is to think about Krishna and go back home, back to Godhead. In the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it's clearly described there that you find a certain place, it's a sanctified place, you have to purify yourself, you sit on something not too high, not too low, with an unagitated mind, you're staring at the tip of your nose, but you're thinking, you're stabilizing the mind, but you're thinking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You come to the conclusion, devotional service. So, but here, there are some yogis that they don't want that. If I'm going to read a little section that, if I can find it quickly. Okay, Prabhupada points out, here, in the Bhagavad Gita, here it is. There's a verse, Vitaraga Baya Krodha Man Maya Mam Upashita. Actually, that verse, Vitaraga Baya Krodha, comes up twice. It means being freed from attachment, fear, and anger. And there's a fear of the person having a personal relationship. We in our own lives, we often find, do we ever have a perfect personal relationship with anybody? Is there anyone's relationship that is so perfect? We often feel let down in some way or other. It's not quite right. And so some of you, personal relationships are not going to satisfy me. I was in America recently, and I had this really painful pain. I was suffering from acute pain, like a swelling in my jaw. I was like painful 24 hours a day. And then being unconscious, or almost being asleep, was a relief from the pain. Eventually, I took some painkillers and antibiotics, and it seemed to help deal with the immediate thing. But I was experiencing what it's like to aspire to be unconscious, to avoid the suffering of life. So sometimes there are people who they don't like the idea of personal. So Prabhupada writes in his purport, consequently, they consider the Supreme, this is about a quarter of the way in this purport. Consequently, they consider the Supreme to be impersonal. And because they are too materially absorbed, the conception of retaining the personality after liberation from matter frightens them. When they are informed that spiritual life is also individual and personal, they become afraid of becoming persons again. And so they naturally prefer a kind of merging into the impersonal void. Generally, they compare the living entities to the bubbles of the ocean which merge into the ocean. So this kind of person here, it's what's being referred to here. That these yogis, look at it, Shishupala's got merged into the body of Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna. I'd like to have that. So he's talking about that thereby their endeavors to do yoga, to by mental speculation, they want to merge themselves into the body of the Lord. And here what's been pointed out, just by the hatred of Lord Krishna, Shishupal attained the same thing. So Uddhava is finding this extraordinary. He finds this a really extraordinary situation. He's finding this bewildering, and he points out then how can he tolerate separation from him? In other words, Krishna is so amazing, so fantastic. How can we tolerate separation from Krishna? How can we tolerate it? Now it's a question from us. How can we tolerate it? Now the question is, are we tolerating it? Are we feeling the separation from Krishna? Are we feeling separation from Krishna? And can we tolerate that separation from Krishna? I think, at least for myself, we're struggling just to feel separation from Krishna. We're not feeling it enough. For example, if we're feeling separation from Krishna, we are rushing. We're anxious to go to the places where Krishna is. So in Uddhava's case, he can't tolerate that separation. You can see that when he was asked the questions, his attraction for Krishna, his love for Krishna, it was pulling him on to the next extraordinary conundrum, you could say. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he appears like an ordinary human being. Krishna was exhibiting fear, of those who are trying to kill him, but he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Fear personified is fearful of Krishna. Krishna was, you could say, submissive to his parents. Another element of bullying, I can't remember all the different previous verses. And here again, that this Lord who he has loved from his very childhood, Uddhava was not a sadhana bhakta. He didn't develop God consciousness by performing rules and regulations of devotional service. He was besotted by Krishna from his very birth. In fact, he described in an earlier verse that even sometimes he wouldn't go to his mother because he was so absorbed in the pastimes of Krishna. And it's also pointed out that he retained that in his whole life. And imagine this, that someone says to you, tell me about Krishna, and suddenly you're stunned. Suddenly you go into complete deeper and deeper ecstasy. You can't even speak because of that thought of Krishna coming in your mind. So this is the level of Uddhava. This description gives us a little insight into the depth of devotional service and something that we can aspire for and something that, for example, the Shikshashtakam imbibes us to hanker for that sense of where every moment is like 12 years in terms of separation from Krishna. So Uddhava's pointing out that because he really knows Krishna, therefore how can you tolerate? How can you tolerate separation from Krishna? So you could say this is a barometer for us. How much are we feeling that separation from Krishna? Let me just check my notes here. See if there's anything that I wanted to bring up. I think I've touched the things I wanted to touch. Another kind of thing I wanted to touch. Shishupal was a king of Chedi. Chedi is currently in an area of Madhya Pradesh. So he had a certain regional, he's a regional king. Okay, any comments or additives? Prabhu, there's a microphone coming.
Thank you for a very nice class.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah. So we understand that Shishupal was one of the doorkeepers, Jai Vijay, So how is it that Shishupal got the same destination as the Gyanis? He merged into Krishna's body because he's a pure devotee, ultimately.
I think I referenced this one. One second. It was only a stepping stone. One second, I'll find the verse. Srila Prabhupada explains the position of Shishupal as follows. Although Shishupal acted as the enemy of Krishna, he was not for a single moment out of Krishna consciousness. He was always absorbed in thought of Krishna, and thus he got first the salvation of Sayujya Mukti, merging into the existence of the Supreme, and finally became reinstated in his original position of personal service. So that's kind of the answer there. That he kind of, the first stage was this Sayujya Mukti where he's merged, but then he became reinstated in his original position of personal service. Jini Vasprabhu.
So, you know when Krishna cut Shishupal's head off, right? The blood didn't fall on the floor. Otherwise, the Rajasui sacrifice would have been contaminated. They couldn't do the Rajasui sacrifice. So, the example is given, if you take shelter of Krishna, you become pure. Even if you are contaminated, you become pure. And the other point is, because Rukmini's father, he didn't object to Rukmini doing the marriage, right? When the marriage did happen with Krishna and Rukmini, he didn't come with his brothers. He didn't come to the marriage because the Yadu dynasty one wasn't happy how he dealt with it, that he didn't object Rukmi sanctioning Rukmi to get married to Shishupal. So Jiva Goswami says, if someone sanctions something wrong, he gets the karma for it. In this sense, the father, he sanctions something wrong, so he couldn't come for the marriage when Rukmini got married to Krishna. Thank this you. Is Jiva Goswami saying in Gopal Champu.
Thank you. Anything else?
Thank you, Prabhu, for the class.
Are we on? Microphone on?
Yeah, it's on. So Shishupal achieves Sayujya Mukti, and then from what we understand, approximately 4,500 years later, he comes, him and his brother comes as Jagai and Madai. So how do we understand this? And then what is the meaning of Sayujya Mukti then? Is it a temporary thing? When one attains Sayujya Mukti, is it an eternal thing? And when what you just read, Shishupala then attained his eternal position. So how does that connect with Sayujya Mukti?
Yeah, our understanding is that when you merge into the form of the Lord, it's temporary. There's that verse, was it 11th canto, that you only think you're liberated, but you're not actually liberated. That's not a permanent position, but it may be a long time. I was considering that, but I didn't about Jagai and Madai. I couldn't find a reference, so I didn't know what to say. But it's almost like, well, let's do one more. Let's play a part in the pastime of Lord Chaitanya. You're already liberated. That was my promise. So, but just do one more for me. So I was thinking it's a bit like that. And they didn't. You know, it's a very short period of time later as time goes by. That's how I was. That's all I could think about it on that regard. It wasn't like the change, you know, just Krishna liked that pastime, so they helped him again in the past name of Lord Chaitanya. Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. It's very interesting about this because Sayuja is also mentioned as one of the four types of liberation. So others are same form, same opulence, same place, isn't it? And then also Sayuja is included. So if that is eternal, then it's very interesting that how can be Sayuja eternal, or as somebody mentioned in class that some jivas do forever be just merge into. It's very interesting. And also in terms of you have same opulence and same form, this both refers to Vaikuntha, even maybe same place, same opulence. So it's interesting that it's divided into different. And question reminds that like how Sayuja can be eternal because it's mentioned as one of the four liberations.
Yeah, I can't really give any more light on that, I'm afraid. I thought about it myself sometimes. But I also, there's that verse that when you do merge, it's only temporary. So you're liberated, but it's temporary because you haven't got that personal relationship.
It's something maybe like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, perpetually those demoniacs throw them in the darkest region of hell. Perpetually, he said.
Mm-hmm.
As interesting as I was studying this cosmology for my project, that there is a place beyond Loka mountain, it's called darkness, eternal darkness. And this place which is so terrible, terrifying, that those who are not qualified to go to hell, to experience suffering, they're thrown into that pit of darkness. And it's mentioned that forever, some jivas just decide to forever be envious of Krishna and forever experience suffering. They said even if they merge into Brahmajyoti, not Brahmajyoti, on the end, when all entities are sucked in the body of Mahavishnu, those entities who are perpetually in hell, they also get sucked together with other jivas, but they continue to suffer even in that place. And they come out and continue forever. So interesting that there is such a kind of forever. It's very inconceivable. So Brahmajyoti also, somebody mentioned in class, that there are those jiva who emerged kind of forever. It's interesting, very conceivable.
Thank you.